This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 12th of December, 2011, and today I'm talking to our regular weekly guest, Bob Chapman of The International Forecaster at TheInternationalForecaster.com. So, Bob Chapman, thank you once again for talking with us this week. So, what's on your mind right now today?
Lots of things. I've been researching and working throughout the entire weekend. Got in a couple of quick rounds of golf and played okay for an oldie. But anyway, a telltale sign in here, in these marketplaces, is that the U.S. Treasury and the Fed and other central banks are not content to allow gold and silver to take their normal course. They are in, all the time, attacking. And when they do that, it is a telltale sign that they still get lots of trouble. They don't want people looking at gold and silver as an alternative investment. And they don't want gold and silver to be that canary in the coal mine, which is telling them, goodness gracious, there's problems about. And so that's why they suppress it. In fact, this past week, we had an omission by Deutsche Börse, which is the equivalent of the New York Stock Exchange. Their literary organ said that, and this is very astounding, the Bank of England, the IMF, and the U.S. Treasury are manipulating the gold and silver market. Well, I've been saying it since 1988. I was right. A few people have come along through the years and said the same things. But for most of the time, we've been outcasts. And this morning, we see they have gold down 2%. They work this thing in percentages. They're so stupid. You think they'd be original. You think they would change their approach. You would think that they would change the code, so to speak. They're dimwits. Anyway, that's what they're doing this morning. And so that leads me into probably as difficult a subject to predict as one will find. I almost compared it to gold and silver, but I can't, because they have to go up no matter what these people do. And so with that said, they're using gold and silver to make you think that everything's okay over there in Europe. Well, I get news for them. And it's not unusual news. They know what I know. And that is, there's no solution over in Europe. The governments are saying, well, the ECB's got to do it. And the ECB, what's a European Central Bank? The European Central Bank says, no, it's up to you. You guys got to do it. And no one wants to venture forward. Who now runs the European Central Bank? Mr. Draghi. And he is a Bilderberger, trilateralist, Goldman Sachs. And he's already lowered interest rates once, from 1.25% to 1%, and he will lower them again, probably down to 0.5% or 1%. Why? Because he's trying to make money as cheap as possible for the players who borrow large amounts of money, such as banks, governments, whatever, and supposedly generate growth. But that's not the real reason. The real reason is to keep the banks from going bankrupt. Which they already are, incidentally. And so we have that going on. And if you've noticed over the last week, their meetings are over now, they being the heads of state in Europe. The meetings are over, and shunted into the background was supposedly the most important thing of all. What do we do with Greece? And Portugal and Ireland. And how do we set up a firewall to protect Italy and Spain, who are broke as well and have been for years. And, you know, you would think these people in these countries who vote would think about these things, but they obviously don't, because the mainline parties get 95% of the vote in Europe, the exception being France, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Anyway, they have not come to a conclusion as to how money in the future is going to be lent to Greece and others like them. They are getting a payment on the 20th, which is 8 days away, and about 80% of the money they're receiving then goes into their ledger as a loan, and then goes immediately out of their ledger as a debit, because all they're doing with 80% of that money is servicing the interest on the debt to the banks. So you have sovereign nations giving them some money to use. 80% of it's not going into the economy, into the administration of Greece. At the same time, the bankers are there with their hands out, and they created that money out of thin air. So they really don't have any loss, even if they didn't get paid. In the meantime, in Greece, they're trying to effect a program which will involve partial default. At the same time, the opposition party, Mr. Samaras, is saying, no, we're not going to make any deals with you. We want an election, and it's supposed to be in February. And, of course, they have an appointed person running their country. An appointed person, can you believe this? American citizen as well. A longtime member of the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberger Group. He's the perfect guy for the job for the Illuminati, just like Draghi is. So there you go. So what he's trying to do is nail Greece down. And incidentally, he was the head of the Bank of Greece when they were taking all this money in and it was going out the other side someplace. And he also worked for the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank. This guy's a real beauty. Sell out your own country. Anyway, they don't care. They live by a different standard than what you and I live by. And so what they want to do is continue to austerityize, if there's such a word, Greece, and bring it to its knees so that the foreigners, bankers, can come in with some more money they printed up out of thin air and buy the country for 10 cents on the dollar. Well, Mr. Samaras isn't going to let that happen. So they've got to have an election. And nothing's going to happen until they have an election. Nothing's going to get passed. Nothing's going to be done. The people, the voyeurettes, the people, the representatives, are afraid to make speeches. Because when they do, people attack them. This is the public. Then they make them run away. They actually chase them. And, you know, reminds me of a scene in Rome in 25 B.C. But anyway, that is where Greece is at right now. And it's not going anywhere. And they're going to have to feed it more money. But they're not talking about it. They're very concerned about Italy and Spain, particularly Italy. But I think what they're going to do, if they're smart, they will selectively allow Greece to go bankrupt, leave the euro, go to the drachmas, clean up their own mess. They're going to do the same thing with Poland and Ireland. They might let it happen to Spain, but they're not going to let it happen to Italy if they can help it. And that's why Mr. Monti was appointed the head of Italy. Now, this man was never elected to anything. Trilateral Commission, Bilderberger, Illuminist, and of course, a graduate of Goldman Sachs. So Italy is supposedly going to be saved by this guy. And I don't think so. So what they have done here, and actually they've been forced to do this because the Trump that they were using was neutralized. And I'll get to that in a second. And they're going to have to continue to fund or allow these first three countries to default. They have to. I don't see any other way around it. I mean, the price is colossal. If you throw in Spain and Italy, we're over $6 trillion. Nobody can afford that in Europe. The economies are slowing down, even Germany. France has been slowing down, followed by Holland and Finland. And Austria has some very important issues in Eastern Europe with residential loans for housing, which they arranged in Swiss francs, if you can believe that. I don't know what they were thinking of. They should have done it in euros. But anyway, that's the way it was. Maybe there's a Swiss where you're conduiting through Austria. I don't know. But the point is that they got nowhere last week. Now, Germany's sitting there and they're saying, wait, we got to have this ESM, European Stabilization Mechanism. And we're going to have a group of 8 plus the 17 Eurozone finance ministers. They're going to all get together. And they're going to tell every country what their budgets are going to be and how much they can spend and how the fiscal part of their governments will be run by this group. And incidentally, they're all appointed. None of them were ever elected to office. And that strips each of the 17 countries of their sovereignty, which I don't think that's a very good idea. Now, what Germany's trying to do here is consolidate, or they may, and this comes as a surprise to you, but they may be trying to destroy the Eurozone, go back to the D-mark, and either abandon the European Union or become king of the heap. Now, why do I say that? You know, Mr. Cameron, the PM from England, didn't go to Brussels with his marching orders. I have to rephrase that. He went to Brussels with his marching orders. And what were they? Well, look, you know, whatever you want to do over there, that's your business. We don't belong to the Eurozone, but we don't want you putting a tax on financial transactions that will put the City of London, which supplies 40% of the jobs in the southeast area of Great Britain. And you'll emasculate us. We can't do that. And so Mr. Cameron said he would not vote for any treaty changes. Now, there has to be a unanimous vote. So what the Germans got to say is, okay, let's make a deal. Or we won't put the tax on. Will you come and join us? That's possible. But on the other hand, maybe they don't want a deal. Maybe they want a breakup. And maybe Cameron and the British monarchy are in on it. We're out thinking about this now. This is a hard one to call. I don't have any inside information. I'm looking at history. I'm looking at the deals that have been cut. Nothing happens for nothing. There's always a reason. And there's usually three reasons why they do something. They being the people who are behind the scenes pulling the chains. And so we can't say with any assurity which way this is going to go. But number one, it could turn out very badly. Number two, it doesn't address the financial problems of Europe at all. And the only way they can sit in their seats of power, which is running the banking industry in Europe and England and throughout the world, they have to extend the problem. Because the minute they say, okay, let's purge the system, the system gets purged, the banks go under, the governments go under, and they lose control. And that's what they're deathly afraid of. Because they know that we know the minute they lose their control, we're coming after them. Legally, through the system. You know, Mr. Banker, why did you do this, that, and the other thing? Now, there's a realization in Europe right now among those who think, and half the population all over the world doesn't think, the other half does. And they're saying, we don't like this at all. And we don't want the euro. Even the French are saying it. We'd like to go back to what we were doing before. And that's going to be reflected in May when France has a presidential election primary and all the parties run. There'll probably be four parties. And out of this mess of political parties, there is one, I think, that could arise during that period, and that is the Front National, in English, the National Front. I lived in Germany and in France for many years, and I speak their languages. I know their culture, I understand them. And the head of the National Front is Marine Le Pen, and I've known her since she was a teenager. So I know the family very well. I know Jean-Marie Le Pen very well. And so there's a, you can count it a little prejudicial point here. And I like to tell people, I like to let people know the truth of where I'm coming from. And she's saying, let's get out of the euro. Well, that reflects today a lot of thinking. Right now, the polls show her with 21% of the vote, which incidentally her father got some 25 years ago when he ran for president. He lost, but at least he got that far. People on the left are not going to seek out the National Front for sure. And so they'll probably represent the third party. And it won't be a conservative socialism. These people are Marxist, Leninist types. So the fight is going to be between Sarkozy, a supposedly conservative party, and Le Pen. And I think she can pull 25-26% of the vote, and that puts her in the final. And then she's really going to go after them. This is one tough lady, and she's brilliant. And I know her very well. So with that said, you're seeing reflections around Europe that you don't normally see. Things are changing. And the change is, I think, catalytically being created by Germany. I really think Germany wants out of the euro and maybe even out of the European Union. They figure, why do we need all these other people except to trade with? Why do we need these people to tell us what to do? And we don't. And here we are, we're the successful ones. We're the people who get up at 4 a.m. and get home from work at 7 p.m. And that's true. I live there. I know what they do. The Swiss do the same thing. And so why should we support all these people? Because their culture reflects or demands of them that they live a totally different lifestyle. And that's true. And so we don't want to support their lifestyle, so we're going to do our own thing. And if they go bankrupt, fine. And we'll take our losses and walk away and become the number one country in Europe, and everybody can trade with us. And if they don't like it, that's just too bad. We're sick of paying for World War II. We paid enough. We were forced into taking the euro and the European Union in exchange for us getting Eastern Germany back, which cost us a fortune. And so we're not going to do any more of those deals. And, of course, their attitude, you know, you got to understand the culture of these countries. Their attitude is normal. But you hop over to France to the left and you find out, oh, those Germans, look what they're doing. That's just terrible. So we're going to be nationalistic French again. Therein comes the election. Nationalism is what is presented by Ms. Le Pen. And so I see big changes coming this year in Europe. Where is the euro going to go? It's going to meander and linger and be taken sideways by injections of money from the Federal Reserve and other central banks that will create out of thin air, causing inflation, continue to destabilize the economies. They don't know what to do, the people in power. The only thing that can save them, outside of the mess that they've deliberately created, is to have another war or a succession of wars. And that's what they're conjuring up right now. And they think that they're going to be able to escape what they've done in economics and finance by having these wars to distract people. I mean, if people think they're going to end up dead tomorrow morning, they're not going to be worried about the finance and economics of their country. And so what we saw last week was another play. You can put it in the category of tragedies, because that's where Europe's headed. There is no solutions. You have this injection of what England has done, and I'm yet to figure out what they're up to. It's either anti or pro-German. I don't know which it is yet. But nothing's going to be solved. And they're going to continue to inject money into Europe, and it just isn't going to work. And we're going to have radio and television, mainline media in the United States and England and Europe, with the same people saying the same thing all the time, their own agenda, which is the agenda of the people who run things from behind the scenes. And the only voices that you hear of truth you're going to find on programs like this and also on the internet.
Well, then, just following up on the main theme of your opening discourse there, Greg Hunter of USAWatchdog.com had a recent editorial entitled Signs of Disintegration, in which he notes disintegration. That's the word both billionaire George Soros and French President Nicolas Sarkozy have recently used to describe what's going on with the European economic crisis. And I think certainly we all see this disintegration happening. We see the Hindenburg that is the EU going up in flames right before our eyes. And I think you're right to note that there's really the two ways that this disintegration could come about, either at the hands of the very same puppeteers and elite and Bilderberg insiders who have been engineering all of this from the start. And I think we have to look to moves like Cameron's veto for something along those lines. And then, of course, there's the contrary, the Democratic process, which threatens, of course, each of the leaders, at least to a certain extent, within the what we know to be controlled elections in many countries. But still, there is a large democratic input still left in the European Union at the national level, of course, not at the EU level. So I think you're right. It is kind of a contest between which of those contrary or countervailing forces will prevail. I know we really don't have a crystal ball, and it's incredibly difficult to say at this point. But what's your gut feeling on which way this is going to play out?
If the Germans are smart, they'll make a deal, and that is we're not going to tax the financial transactions. And then England will drop their opposition to treaty changes to some extent. Historically, the changes in part, which are trying to be interjected into an amended treaty or a new treaty or whatever, is that there will be a penalty for public debt in any country exceeding 3% of GDP. And you cannot exceed overall debt of 60% of GDP. Well, I got news for you. It's already in the treaty. And everybody broke it, including Germany. So, you know, as they say, what's the diff? I mean, what are they telling us? They're telling us they're going to be stricter? I mean, how do you take a country? Like, we'll take Italy, because they're a larger, stronger, if you may, country. How do you tell them you're financially on your behind and you're over 3% of GDP and governmental debt and over 60% of GDP overall? So we're going to fine you gazillions of euros. Well, it's like kicking a country when it's down. You can't do that. It doesn't work. So they're saying, well, we know that. That's what they're saying. So we're not going to let you run your country anymore. We're going to run it with our group of eight over there in Luxembourg, assisted and immunized. They can't be sued. These 17 financial people, all of whom have been appointed, who are going to tell your countries what to do? And you lose your sovereignty. And that's what you have to give up because you spent too much money. Well, that stinks. And that's not going to work, Germany. Believe me. I mean, we're seeing it in Greece right now. They're just waiting for the election. And Samaras is going to win. And what's going to happen next? He's going to say, I ain't going to abide by all that stuff. Look, we're not paying you back. And you know what else he said? Which has got everybody in Greece who's been in politics since 1976 terrified, including Papandreou's father, Andris, who was one of the worst crooks in the history of Greece. You know, his son just resigned as president of Greece so that they could have the Papanemos come in, who's Greek-American, who has been appointed by the Illuminati to run the country. He's going to get thrown out. And they're going to go into default. They're just not going to do this. And that'll start the ball rolling. How are they going to stop them? They're not. The word that you just used, democracy, it works if you allow it to. And Samaras will win. And Greece will be put on a totally different course. And don't think that the rest of the professionals, these are politicians, bureaucrats, technocrats, which are really bankers. They all know this. And they're trying to figure out, well, how are we going to stay in power with this stuff going on? How are we going to absorb all these losses? We'll have a war. And so that's where this is all headed. There's no solutions. Think about that. There is not a solution to this. You know, through politics, finance and economics. And in the bottom line, just like in America and in England, everything is being done to save the bankers, save the government, but screw the people. Impoverish everybody so that these people can keep their seats of power. That's what this is all about. And if they can't handle it, which I don't think they can, the insiders behind the scenes, they'll have their war or wars. That's what's going on. I mean, we even got Iran now suing the United States for sending drones over their country. It's an act of war. So are we that far away? I think they're getting warmed up for the game. And I think that's where it's headed. And it's going to cost a lot of people their lives. And ultimately, some of them may be bankers.
Well, we certainly have to wait to see how that plays out. But certainly, I think you are unfortunately correct that we are heading into some sort of global, probably apocalyptic type war, because really no other scenario seems to really follow from what we see the chess pieces being set up right now. And of course, the latest news, as I just reported earlier today on my YouTube channel, U.S. troops deploying on Jordan-Syria border, according to several sources from within Jordan. So another extremely worrying sign in an extremely volatile area. And I think you're exactly right to note that, of course, what we're really seeing here is not a monetary collapse so much as it is a change in the power structure of the European society. And I think once we start to understand that this is not fundamentally about money, it's about consolidation of control, we start to understand what's really happening behind the scenes. So shifting our focus from the European continent to the North American continent, but maintaining that focus on the destruction, the disintegration of national sovereignty. Of course, this past week, we saw Presidents Obama and Prime Minister Stephen Harper of Canada announcing a new U.S.-Canada border deal, which, of course, is being presented to us in the name of facilitating business trade and protecting national security interests. But, of course, as you and I know, is really about further destroying and completely eradicating national boundaries. What's your take on this new border deal and the provisions that it contains?
It is part of the plan of the Illuminists behind the scenes to integrate neighboring nations into groups. The original intent was the marriage of Mexico, the United States, and Canada, and the Trans Texas corridor all the way up into Canada, and it didn't work. They got shot down at the pass because the public learned about it and really did a good job of shutting that off. And what was it called? The North American... You remember?
The Security and Prosperity Partnership?
Yeah, that's it. And the thing is, and I've written about this, they never stopped. And how they intend to help bring this amalgamation about is through making the rules for almost everything the same in all three countries. In other words, you sell pepper in Mexico, and it'll have the same labeling as it will in Canada in a different language. In Canada, it's in English and French, and it's in Spanish and both the United States and Mexico. A lot of Spanish-speaking Americans in the United States. And how they ship goods, there's all kinds of things that they've been working on for the last 4 or 5 years, unbeknownst to the public. I knew what they were doing. And which brings about another thing. We could have some real upsets in this next year, next November in particular. Ron Paul could be elected the President of the United States. And if he was, things would probably change dramatically in relation to what you've brought up. And the same in Mexico. The party that runs the presidency is PAN, PAN. And the opposition party, PRI, which is called PRI, PRI has a majority in the House and the Senate, and it's going to get bigger. And they're going to take the presidency. And will they go along with the New World Order program to amalgamate? I don't know. But I'll find out. I'll tell you that because I get real good contacts in that area. And then after they finish that, were they to be successful, which they may or may not be, they want to amalgamate all of Central and South America into a unit, I guess, called the Americas. And they're doing the same thing in Asia, just like they've done in the European Union. And it isn't going to work. Different stages of development, different cultures. These people don't get it. And they're brilliant. And the evidence is right in front of them. I mean, their experiment in Europe, as far as bringing together as a unit in the European Union, has been disastrous. Nobody wants to do anything in regard to that. They told everybody that when they have this, people will be going from Paris to Frankfurt to work and from Frankfurt to Malmo to work or whatever. And everybody will speak 19 different languages and dialects. and everything, you know, everything's going to be great, and we're going to live happily ever after. And that's not going to happen. It hasn't happened and will not happen, whether it's in Europe, North and South America, or throughout Asia. And a lot of these countries historically have been at each other's throats for 6,000 years. I don't think they're going to get along very well. So this grand dream of putting everything together and having a world government, a world currency, a world this and a world that, it's crazy. They might be smart, but they are insane.
That's a very good way of putting it, and I think actually psychologically speaking quite true, because anyone who's looked into the psychopathy of the people who tend to be in positions of power will know that to be true. But on the subject of world this and world that, of course, we've just seen the wrapping up of the Durban climate talks in South Africa, and the talks were extended for 36 hours in order for them to reach a deal, and it is currently the narrative on that is still being written. Some people are proclaiming this to be a planet-saving deal that came along at the last minute. Other people are saying it's a huge flop, but I guess we'll have to wait and see what really comes out of that. But I noticed in your most recent edition of The Forecaster, you're talking about Australia heading for the worst year of jobs growth in 15 years, and I can't help but note that Australia, of course, recently cut off its own legs with its new carbon tax legislation that just went in, despite huge popular, or I should say unpopularity of that legislation. What can you say about Australia's recent carbon tax legislation and that idea in general for trying to limit the carbon dioxide emissions, which we know are not as harmful as they are trying to tell us they are?
Well, with that said, we have a number of subscribers and correspondents in Australia. And what it amounts to is this. The cost of carbonization, we'll call it, is going to be passed on to the public by companies, no matter what they may be, no matter whether they're in services or in manufacturing. And the cost of living is going to spiral upward, and the cost of things is going to do the same. And anything that is pressure sensitive to higher costs probably will decline in value. And that's not very good. It's the worst thing at the worst time. This plan was put into effect by Julia, I can't remember her last name.
Julia Gillard.
Gillard, and she is an accomplice of the Illuminists who want to eventually subject the world to a carbon tax to fund whatever they want to do. And there's all kinds of things I won't get into. And she sold the country out. She's happy about that. I'm sure that she'll be paid hundreds of millions of dollars in different ways. You see what Tony Blair is doing now, making hundreds of millions of dollars a year, several years after he was PM in the UK. Well, that's the way they do it. You go and make a speech and you get $3 million, or you go over in this job over here and you get $20 million, and that's how they pay everybody off. Legitimate, everybody pays taxes on it, and they live happily ever after for selling their people out. That's what's happened in Australia. So what are our people telling us? They're telling us people are shutting their businesses down, and they're moving out of the country. So all you people who thought that maybe you might want to go to Australia because they speak English there, because you didn't want to live in the United States anymore or someplace else anymore, hold up. We have an exodus of people leaving Australia. And so their work's cut out for them. And as they, the people behind the scenes, are successful in implementing these taxes country by country, each one of those countries will see exoduses of people. Where they're all going to end up, who knows? And this whole climate situation in Durban is you would think that, I don't know how to describe this, it's just as crazy as crazy. Because they're lying about everything, and we know it. The public knows it, and they don't care. They're going to do what they want to do in the way that they want to do it. And if you don't like it, it's too bad. And that's what it's all about. And so they go and have their climate things, and they all lie to each other, lie to the public, and expect to get away with it. I think they're treading on very dangerous ground, because what's going to happen is the people in the countries, well, we'll take Julia as an example, she'll be kicked out of office, there's no question, and she doesn't care, she'll get well paid for what she did, and the public will elect somebody who won't do that, and might even rescind those taxes. So as long as the bankers don't have total control of the people who are running for office, there can be changes. And I think they're coming, just like they are in Europe, because people are starting to see through things that are going on there. You know, in France in particular, they're very nationalistic people. And they're very I don't know how to put it. They're very strong about even the little regions that they come from, the provinces, the cities within provinces, and, you know, I'm from Marseille, and we got this, that, and the other thing, and you guys over there in Lyon, you don't have anything. They have that attitude. It's very insular, and it's very tribal. And you see it to some extent in Germany as well. Well, when you have this underlying, I would say, disrupting element culturally, it's never going to go away. And these people who are trying to make world government are just chasing their tails like a bunch of monkeys having fun. That's where that's headed. They can't be successful. Yes, we're going to see Durban and those kinds of meetings again, and we're going to see what we saw in Australia, which will probably be thrown out again, because the we'll call them Europeans, Australians, they're going to leave. And they have unlimited immigration there now, and most of it's coming from Asia. So I guess maybe if the European types leave, maybe we'll have an Asian Australia. Who knows? And so it goes on and on. And this disruption within the lives of human beings from generation to generation, because these people want to experiment. It's like we were a bunch of orangutans in a cage. And this week we're going to see what your response is going to be to that. And this is going on. It's like a experiment. That's what George Soros is talking about. The effectiveness of change. He's a change agent.
Extremely, extremely important insight there. Would you care to flesh that out for people who don't understand what that means?
The people on the inside who run things, and there's several million of them, it's not only those with great wealth, those in monarchies, those who have been involved for thousands of years in this, as families, and when they affect change, they have someone who does that for them. Someone belongs to their group. But they're not top people, they're second-tier people. And they tell you what the changes are that are coming. And Henry Kissinger does that and did that. It's the big new Brzezinski and George Soros. And Henry Kissinger is now in his late 80s, and he has had a bypass some years ago. Brzezinski evidently has been told to keep his mouth shut, except at talks, speeches, things that are going on within their sphere, such as the Bilderberger meetings or speeches of the Council on Foreign Relations, etc. And all you have to do is catch what he has to say there, and you find out where they're headed. Soros is a mover and shaker. He's got billions at his disposal, which he stole, of course. He's a crook. And I can't say that about the other two knowingly, because I don't know that they are, but he is. And so he will put the groundwork in for change. And then he'll tell you, well, over here, we're going to have these changes. And he'll look like a big guru because he's got billions of dollars to make those changes. So that's how it works. And incidentally, when they die, all their wealth, with the exception of a small amount, maybe 20, 50, 100 million, whatever, goes back to the alumnus. And they recycle it through someone else. That's how that works.
Bob Chapman, it is always a pleasure and an honor picking your brain every week, and I truly do feel blessed to be in this position, and certainly it is quite a responsibility, because obviously you just have so much background and information about all of these characters that that we could talk for hours and hours, but of course, unfortunately, we can't talk for hours and hours, so that's why I always direct people to the International Forecaster, because it does really contain so much information on a weekly basis, not only weekly, but twice a week, in fact. So tell people a little bit about the Forecaster and how they can get their hands on a copy.
Well, the Forecaster is about business, finance, economic, social, and political issues all over the world. We publish by email on Wednesdays and Saturdays, runs around 35 or 40 pages each time. We have a hard copy that comes out twice a week for those who are not on the internet. And everything that you need to know each week is in that publication. You can get a free introductory copy by going to theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, Forecaster.com. You can also go to www.intforecaster.com. Intforecaster.com. For those of you who want to ask a question, and we answer everyone, or get a copy of either, or get a copy of our latest report regarding gold and silver shares, you can email us, and that address is Bob, B-O-B, at intforecaster.com, Bob at intforecaster.com. And for those of you who would like to call collect, that number is 877-479-8178. 877-479-8178. You can get copies there, as well as if you'd like to become a subscriber, it's a place to go, because they are offering free one-year subscriptions. The offer that they're making is excellent, terrific. And you should take advantage of if you want to become a subscriber.
Absolutely, and I certainly hope that people out there will take advantage of that, because why wouldn't you want to be a subscriber to the Forecaster with all of the news and information coming out of there on a weekly basis? And speaking of that, I guess we will be talking next Monday for even more news and analysis. So, Bob Chapman, thank you once again for your time this week.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you all for listening.